A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brialso Lake puts this game away!
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
It's March Madness season. You're listening to the Scotsman, Brian Preece, here with you. And Mr., who do you think you are? Mr. Tran.
I am. And the madness is here. The madness is beginning.
There's been buzzer beaters all week already. It's
nice.
It's Sunday.
Get that madness going. We love it.
It's exciting. We got Utah State men's and women's basketball to talk about today. We actually have a ton on the agenda, but I want to off the top mention the women's basketball team, Kayla R, down in Las Vegas in the first round of the Mountain West Women's Tournament. Tonight they're going to be playing Boise State. Mm-hmm. So 8:30 tonight. If you happen to listen to this over the next, you know, 2 hours before that tip-off.
Tonight is Sunday, March 5th.
Yes, check it out. But, you know, which Mountain West Conference play, we got a lot going on. Let's go ahead and start with the men's team, the Mountain West Player of the Week, Stephen Ashworth, and the number 3 seed, Utah State Aggies. Last time we were in here, we weren't looking at them as a 3 seed.
It's been a, you know, what, 5-game win streak for them.
Yep.
You know, but this is so the Boise State game that happened Saturday on the 4th. That was the game that, you know, I mistakenly thought, but you know, Ryan Odom a month ago, right? Remember, like,
yeah,
when we talked about how he was like, hey guys, I know
because it's spring break,
right? It's spring break. Can you guys, maybe just push your plans out just a couple extra days, come to the game, you want to see you there? And you know, it was a sold out crowd. Students showed up, I mean, it was a blizzard in Logan. There was a spring break, and you know they came out and showed in full force, which was nice. So that was good, and that probably propelled them to that win.
Oh, the Spectrum was packed, and absolutely, you know, we've seen for you and I were up there at Utah State in the early 2000s. I grew up in Cache Valley, so spent my whole life going to the Spectrum. And when that building is full, just shy of 10,000 people, there are very few, if any, more difficult places to play in the country, yeah, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah, and that's a big win there, right, the Boise State. Just a couple weeks prior, Nevada came into the Spectrum,
mm-hmm,
and if you remember that game, Utah was manhandled.
I think they fell behind by 21 points in the first half,
half. The Nevada player went 7 for 7, 6 threes, and I don't know what, if it was a J.C. Carroll magic, what happened, but they were just chipping away, and then in the second half, they were able to take the lead and win. So that was part of the 5-game win streak. The Aggies finally get a Q1 win. They've been blanked all season. They have a lot of Q2 wins, which is nice.
I think eight or nine quad two wins is what I was reading earlier this afternoon.
Right. So do you want to go to Mount West tournament first, or do you want to, you know, first? We'll head
let's
to,
talk
guess,
about last night, man. Yeah, I like looking at last night, and mainly because, you know, it's one game in the grand scheme of things, of course. But if you expand it a little bit more and we start looking at this 5-game winning streak, I think there were either 2 or 3 road wins during this, which had been kind of a bugaboo for the Aggies. And so,
I mean, they went to UNLV and they just whooped on UNLV.
Well, they got their largest conference win of the year, winning by 25 points down in UNLV, and that's a good Running Rebels team.
I mean, that same Running Rebels team that gave the Aggies fits in Logan,
mm-hmm,
they went down to Vegas, And I was like, I thought it was the best game they played all year in conference play.
Well, and that's the same Runnin' Rebels team that turned around after losing by 25 to Utah State, went into Reno and beat Nevada. And without UNLV knocking off Nevada, the Aggies are the 4 seed in the conference tournament and have a semifinal date with San Diego State. So, I mean, there's so many things to talk about, but, you know, 25-point win over UNLV and then
13 to Boise.
It's just, I think, I genuinely believe that Utah State, and I know we already mentioned earlier in the podcast that our conversations had been that we probably didn't think Utah State was a tournament, NCAA tournament deserving team about 3 weeks ago, right?
A quarterfinal win in the Mountain West tournament would be like an upset, we thought.
Yes.
And now, like, they're favored to get to, the semifinal of the Mountain West tournament. They have a chance. They've got a puncher's chance. Is this a case of getting hot at the right time?
This is a team playing their best basketball of the season. That's absolutely where I was going with this. And the 5 straight wins, and the Aggies all season long had been plagued by spells of inefficiency offensively, where they would just go cold for 5, 6, 7 minutes at a time. Yes. I mean, we're not talking 2 or 3 minute stretches without a field goal. We're talking almost 10 minutes. It's a long time.
It felt like it wasn't just them missing shots. It was like defenses really pushing them out of what they wanted to do, and they weren't executing.
Yes. Over the last 5 games, they've been able to avoid that. The defense has really stepped up. I know last night, there's a lot of numbers about this Boise State team. The Broncos are one of the best defensive teams in the country. I think they came in as the 10th highest rated defensive team in the country. And Utah State puts 86 points on the board against them. And I don't know the exact number, so I'm not going to make stuff up.
Free ice cream for the
It is free ice cream, which is huge up in Logan. But Boise State hadn't allowed more than 80 points to more than a handful of opponents this season. So Utah State being able to come in and they put up these good numbers, but they're playing. They're not playing 40 minutes of basketball right now, but they're playing, instead of playing 31 minutes, they're playing 36, 37 minutes a night. A complete team.
I guess Boise too. That first half was really great by Utah State. So, and we see, even 3 weeks ago, it was like, oh my God, they would get down by 15 points as, San Diego State. And then they would make it interesting at the end. But man, they had these like really big dry spells. And we talked about dry spells, but just droughts in the first half of the games, first half of the second halves. And like it would just snowball. But now they're coming out a lot. They're coming out with more urgency, it feels like. So.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned the fast start against Boise State. I think it was eerily similar to the game up in Boise earlier this season, just in reverse. You know, the Broncos came out in Boise and were making everything. They just went nuts. Last night, the Aggies made, 7 of their first 9 shots. They shot nearly 60% in the first half. I've actually got the number here in front of me. I might as well. 62% in the first half. And then they finished the game 57% from the field. They were able to come out with a fast start, put Boise State on their heels, and that was the key because the Broncos made a run. They got back within 6 points with a couple minutes left in that game, and it was Player of the Week Steven Ashworth that hit a big 3 from the top of the key to put that game out of reach once again.
So they get that win against Boise in the Spectrum. They had the number 3 seed, and what's important about that now going to the Mountain West tournament, they're on the opposite side of San Diego State.
Yes, exactly. So when we look at the Mountain West tournament bracket, if Utah State had lost that game or if UNLV had not beaten Nevada, the Aggies would be looking at their second game in the conference tournament on Friday, a potential date with San Diego State, a team they're already 0-2 against. I'm not saying you can't beat the Aztecs by any means. On a neutral site, anything can happen. Right. You never know. And we've seen the Aggies go down in the Mountain West tournament and beat ranked Aztec squads.
Both games against San Diego State this year were just those 10-minute drowses were what killed them. Like in those other 30 minutes, other 25 minutes, they played really well, even outplayed San Diego State at points, but they would have a little 10-minute thing where they would let the San Diego State player score like 15 points in a row or something, and it really hurt them. They were playing catch-up the whole game. So now we talked about it, San Diego State, Utah State Just a few weeks ago, we're like, oh boy, like they're not really on the bubble. Now they're firmly on the bubble. I think most bracketologists have them as like one of the first four out, or next four out, like whichever one of those means that they're
first four, last.
Last buys. There's a lot of things now.
Who knows?
Back in my day, it was just next four out.
I'm still trying to figure out the quad wins. I still don't know what those mean.
Well, that's crazy because like the Nevada one was the quad one win at some point. And then dropped out.
And now it's not.
Exactly. So, and if you just say, hey, Pete, Boise State by more than by like, what, 25 points, it would have dropped Boise's net out of the quad. It's very weird.
All I know is right now Utah State is 21st in the NCAA's developed stat of net rating.
Right.
21st in the country. If the NCAA created a stat that says you are the 21st best team, you should probably be in the top 68 in the tournament, right?
This is interesting, right? Because so we got the net. You know, Utah State does very well in the net. You know, way ahead of a lot of other teams. You know, obviously 21st. But you know, Scotty G actually tweeted this out today, right? That how like Nevada ahead of Utah. Everybody has Nevada ahead of Utah, even though Nevada's net is below Utah. Utah State has beaten Nevada once, but all these weird things that Nevada's still ahead of Utah State because they have more quad one wins, and Utah State only has that one, even though they've already beaten Nevada once. So very weird. But, I mean, you know, gut feeling, like if it ended today and we just assume that let's assume the Utah State Aggies, they lose the semifinal of the Mount West tournament.
So they lose on Friday in the second round.
Yes. So they get the quarter, because if you lose in the quarterfinal, that really hurts your resume.
Yes.
But let's assume that they win the quarterfinal, because this is the hypothetical. You know, they'll have a rematch against Boise in the semifinal. Let's say it's a close loss, close win, close loss. I mean, are they? They're right there. What's your gut feeling?
When I look at the numbers, when I look at the rankings, when I look at all of those things that, you know, on Sunday afternoon as the tournament committee gets together in that little hotel room, wherever it's going to be, I think they do it in Kansas City each year.
Yes.
When you look at all those numbers, it tells me that Utah State should be a tournament team. When I take a step back, I take my fan hat off, I put my analyst hat on, and I start looking at the team that Utah State is and their inconsistency. Now, I'm going to give them a boost because I do think they're playing their best basketball of the season right now, but I still am not 100% convinced today that they're a tournament team. Now, in this hypothetical, you're saying they've won another game and they and the quarterfinals and played Boise State in the semifinals.
Yes.
And, that result is up in the air. It could be a win or a loss. If you play Boise State you lose a really good game and so you dominate in the quarterfinal, win by, you know, double figures, I will say we're probably a tournament team today as we're speaking.
Right.
I have Utah State on the outside looking in.
Because, I mean, I guess my bubble thought is, does the Mountain West get four teams in? Because if Nevada's ahead of Utah State and Nevada loses in the semifinal, if Nevada and Utah State have the same result in the semifinal, does the Mountain West choose Nevada? You know, does Nevada get in above Utah State, I guess, in the Mountain West watch?
When it comes down to that, I think it just comes down to preferences. When you're the selection committee and it's, okay, we've seen Nevada a couple of times. What style of play do we think is going to look better in the NCAA tournament? Now, I've always been a proponent of once you get to postseason play in college basketball, the biggest determining factor of wins and losses is your guard play. And Utah State has strong guard play. The problem is they just don't have depth, and it's the same story we've talked about all season long, is there's an 8-man rotation, and without Rylan Jones, Stephen Ashworth, last night, Ashworth sat, I actually went back and checked the box score, he literally sat for 21 seconds of play last night. He played over 39 minutes.
Is it like the end of half or something that he
he got pulled out with 12:11 left in the second half, and then the media timeout came at 11:50. So he sat for 21 seconds plus
coaching.
The media time. Oh, it's great coaching.
Great coaching,
because you got him 4 minutes of rest.
Yeah, 4 or 5 minute break with 21 seconds of game time missed.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic coaching, but they don't have a lot of depth. So I think Utah State's guards, if you match them up against the Wolfpack, I don't know, maybe kind of sixes. Nevada might be a little bit more athletic, more explosive with a couple of guys, but it's just, it's eye of the beholder at that point. If you're telling me that San Diego State and Boise State are locks for the NCAA tournament, which I think is true, I don't think the Mountain West, even though it should get the respect to have four teams, I don't think it has. It does have the respect. You know, there's reality and there's the expectation. And I don't think the Mountain West has the national respect to get four teams unless they do something special in the tournament.
Okay.
In the conference tournament.
That's 2 months ago, we're like, ooh, is this a five?
I know. Well, things change so fast.
Yeah, New Mexico fell out very quickly, and
Did you have something else?
No, I was going to say the Mountain West ate each other like we said
yeah.
they would. So.
Yeah, it was just cannibalization across the conference. Now, we wanted to go through and just give some individual grades for players this season. But before we do that, I do have one question for you. You know, we've talked about San Diego State. They came into the week ranked 18th in the country, lost to Boise State. So they're probably going to fall but still stay in the top 25. You've got Boise State, you've got the Aggies, you've got Nevada. We haven't really talked about any other specific teams in the Mountain West. Is there anybody outside of San Diego State and Boise State, and then you know the other two top four teams getting the byes in Nevada and Utah State, is there anybody else that you see as having the potential to make a run in the Mountain West tournament?
I mean, I think we said this last time, too. It's like the Mountain West sort of has – you know, there was a top echelon. New Mexico fell out of that. And the Utah State was sort of like that, the line of demarcation. They moved up. But then there's UNLV just beat them Nevada. You had San Jose State who beat
UNLV's playing at home.
Yeah.
It's not their court. Locker room, but they're playing at home. They're sleeping in their own beds. They have
Vegas.
A benefit.
You got San Jose State who's played spoiler. New Mexico was at one point, you know, undefeated coming into conference play. They were good. I don't know what really has happened to them this season. I don't know if the New Mexico State bad juju's rubbing off on them or whatever. But yeah, so like the problem is that like the Mountain West does have three or four spoiler teams in there that we assumed in our hypothetical said that Utah State was going to win the quarter, but there's no guarantee. That quarterfinal game is going to be hard, whoever it is. Because who did Wyoming beat Nevada, right?
Early in the year, but Wyoming's fallen apart too.
So one of these things that like you got to be in your A game because there's a couple other teams there that are like, hey, you know, they may not win the tournament, but they're looking for a quarterfinal win. That's their Super Bowl this year. So they know they're not going to win the Mountain West tournament. They get one win over one of the top four seeds. That's going to be good enough for them, and they're going to come highly motivated with nothing to lose. So.
I look at Utah State's potential first round matchup and I see it as so they're going to play the winner of New Mexico and Wyoming, the 6 and 11 seeds in the tournament, and if we assume New Mexico advances, and it'd be pretty far fetched to see Wyoming win that game with the losses they've suffered injury wise. They had several players leave the program. It's been rough in Laramie this year, rougher than usual in Laramie.
Josh Allen's not walking through that door. So.
Yeah, exactly. But so if you assume New Mexico State New Mexico advances, then you're playing the Lobos in that quarterfinal game. New Mexico is the team that I look at that has the chance to get hot for a weekend and storm through this tournament and take that automatic bid. And so if you're the Aggies, you can't go into this game thinking it's an automatic W. You beat New Mexico at home, but this is a team with the two leading scorers in the Mountain West, Jamal Mashburn Jr. and Jalen House. Jalen House also a terrific defensive guard, and this is why I have New Mexico. I talked about the importance of guard play in postseason play, and New Mexico probably has the best guard line in the conference. So they're a team that I could see making a run. They're also a team because you know they've fallen off. They've struggled in conference play. They were the last undefeated team in the country, and now they come in as the sixth seed in the Mountain West tournament. So you don't know what you're going to get, but individual talent on any given night, I think New Mexico might have the most in the in the conference.
That's dangerous. So, again, nothing to lose there. So, Jamal Mastrom's son and Daniel House's son, I believe. So, Daniel House. but, yeah, so we're going to move on. So, you're going to talk about so you have some grades for some of these players. And there's a couple names, I think, and we'll get to it. There's a couple names that I think are really interesting. So, I can't wait till we get to them.
All right, start listing them off. You give me a player, and I haven't done this ahead of time. I'm just going to do it now.
So yeah, we
off the cuff.
So DJ Idlerock, right? So he came in. This is one of those interesting players because, I mean, we know his strengths, we know his weaknesses. Is he playing just in lieu because of Ryan Jones' injury? And so I wonder what you thought of him from preseason to now.
RJ is a really interesting case because, like you said, is he getting playing time right now because, he's earned it and he's playing really well, or is he getting playing time because he's the backup point guard option without Rylan Jones? I think it's a combination of the two. RJ, after starting every game he played in last season, has come off the bench in 30 games this year. So obviously that's a transition. That's tough, for a competitive person. It depends on how that's even phrased. How do you learn that you're going to go from being a starter and now in your senior year, your last year of collegiate sports, you're going to be coming off the bench and I don't know what your role is. Yeah. So Idlerock, I think, has with the knowledge of missing Rylan Jones for, I think Jones missed 19, 20 games this year, more than well over half the season. And Idlerock coming in, he looked tentative early in the season. He looked like he didn't really understand what his role was. He came on the floor and just wasn't sure what he was being asked to do. Am I the point guard facilitating for this team? Should I be looking to get my own shot? Should I be trying to create? What do I do? Over the last, we've talked about the Aggies playing their best basketball in the last five games. Over the last 2-3 weeks, I think Idlerock has really settled in. He started to play better. He no longer looks like he's forcing things. He's just letting the game come to him a lot more. It's not the perfect season. You look at some of his numbers this year, 42% from the field. Scroll over, look at his scoring average this season. I don't even have this. Oh, there it is. I found it. It looks like Idlerock's averaging 2.7 points per game this year. I would have loved to see him contribute a little bit more offensively. But overall, I'm going to give RJ – I went long-winded on this. I'm going to have to cut this back. RJ, I'm going to give RJ a B-. It probably would have been closer in the C range, but over the last 2 or 3 weeks, the way that he stepped his game up and just appeared to look more comfortable. And I think his play is going to be critical in the Mountain West tournament because you have to find a way to be able to get Steven Ashworth some rest when you're playing 2, 3, 4 days in a row. It's one thing when you're playing twice a week. When you're playing that many days in a row,
yes,
it gets hard to play the entire game.
Right, and then that's DJ there. Let's do the bench guys first. Apparently there's the Mountain West Sixth Man of the Year award. So I guess so. I guess there's one for every conference. So last year I went to Chad Baker-Mazzara from SDA. Alphonso Anderson won it for Utah State 2 years ago. But Dan Akin, I feel, would be obviously a leading candidate for that Sixth Man of the Year role. My expectations of him rose significantly as the year went on. So what kind of grade would you give Dan Akin here?
Akin's been one of the best players off the bench for any team in the country.
Yes.
He's come in this season 66% from the field, off of the bench in all but one game this season. His free throw stroke, I wouldn't call, textbook, but he sure seems to draw a lot of lane violations.
It
works. I love what Dan Akin can do off of the bench. I would love it if he had a little bit more back to the basket ability instead of just a catch and go up, but guys are what they are. And for what he was asked to do, the role he was put in as the sixth man and come in at that first time out every single game for Trevin Dorius and just score and bring energy, rebound, and block shots, Dan Akin's got to get a B+,
at least
yeah, right?
I would think – I thought maybe A-. Dan Akin, number one, I look at the box score for Boise, 6 of 6 from the line last night. But also,
And he hit late free throws too. Some clutch free throws down the stretch.
31 minutes compared to Darius's 11. And that's happened in multiple games where he's played not just the majority, but like the bulk.
Yeah.
Bulk of the minutes at that center position.
Yeah, he's coming off of the bench. It's just, he's not actually a bench player. He's not actually a sixth man. He's just.
I mean, there are games where the minutes are closer, but I think if you looked at all the box scores, we would see that he played a majority of those games. Ziemota. This is something that was interesting. He had a couple of games early in the season. We're like, okay, wow, there's something here. I thought that maybe he could be the sixth man for the Aggies. Mm-hmm. But then last night, you know, only 10 minutes against Boise. There are games where he's not noticeable. He's another interesting player like him. I thought that, beginning of the year, could be. But as the year has gone on, like, all right, there's a couple games like, meh. It's Utah State, seventh man off the bench. I think he's done fine. You have a grade for Z there?
I think Z has had an okay season. Mm-hmm. I think Utah State would have been so much better off if Z could have come in and absorbed a few more of those Rylan Jones minutes, been able to play with the ball in his hands a little bit more. The main thing that you and I have discussed all season long that the Aggies were lacking was a creator off the dribble. And when you look at Utah State and their personnel, I think Z and his skill set is the closest to being able to create consistently off of the dribble, you know. And as a sophomore, he just unfortunately hasn't reached that point in his development. It's not a knock on Ziemota. He's a young kid. He hasn't gotten a ton of playing time, and so he's growing. Next year, I would be a lot more harsh on Ziemota if he finished the way he did this season. Overall, I'll give Ziemota a C just because, you know, he came in. There was obviously learning experience. You know, there was a dunk in the game against UNLV where he ended up getting a technical for hanging on the rim and then slapping the glass. And you see him, he walks past the bench and just. You couldn't see Ryan Odom, but I know Odom had something to say to Z in that moment. And on screen, you can see Z just give him a thumbs up like, yeah, my bad. Yeah. There's some growing.
And he dunked a little bit later that game, too.
And was fine. Yeah. So there's a maturity factor, I think, that comes with Z Ziemota and his growth. But overall, his game, I'll give him a C. Okay. I don't think he's somebody you're going to rely on in the postseason tournaments unless – there's an injury or something like that.
If he can just bring one of those good games to the tournament, that could work.
But Z is the guy I'm looking forward to take a big step next year if Utah State's going to remain competitive.
Trevin Darius, we just talked about him with Dan Atkin. Darius, he has size, you can't teach that. But it seems like they like Atkin because the faster athleticism has been more helpful than Darius' size.
Darius is a guy who, throughout his career, has tended to get into foul trouble. Has been a bugaboo for him off and on at times this season. And that's part of the reason you see Dan Atkin playing so many minutes over Darius. The last time I went up to Logan, I believe it was the Air Force game, I was talking with a couple of the other Aggie beat reporters and commenting on how I feel like Trevin Darius looks more comfortable and at ease with what he's asked to do on both ends of the floor over the last month than he ever has in his Aggie career. Not necessarily the numbers popping off of the screen all the time. He did score career high against Air Force. I believe it was that game. He ends up with 17 points, but he's a guy the Aggies like to run the first play of the game to Trevin Darius almost religiously. And then he's somebody who, when he has a size advantage, he can take advantage of it. And when he doesn't have that advantage, he doesn't try and do too much. And that's what I love about Trevin Darius. The size at 7'1" in college basketball, an enormous advantage. I'm going to give Darius a B, bordering on a B+, just because he did exactly what he was asked to do, nothing more, nothing less.
Clog that lane, get some rebounds. That's sort of what he's supposed to do there. Can you separate Sean Bairstow and Max Schulgen's grades? To me, they're kind of the same. They're both really good starters. But nothing that was like, all right, they would have games that were special, But for the most part, like, you'd like have them there because they're solid starters.
I would separate them. I would give Max Schulga probably a slightly higher grade. I think I would give Max a B plus, maybe bordering on an A minus. The big problem that you've had with Schulga this year, and again, it's questions of maturity, experience, growth, is Schulga at times will try and do too much with the basketball. He tries to create too much, and he ends up turning the ball over a lot. You know, you can look at his stat sheet this season. There's several games with 3, 4, 5, 6 turnovers. That happens too much from one guy, but he's also the type of player who can go out, and I think this was against Air Force as well. He and Dorius both had career highs in this game. Scored 29 points, made 4 or 5 threes in that game. He gets assists. He crashes the glass. I love what Max Schulga brings. I graded him. I said B plus, right?
B plus, yeah.
Yeah. And then Sean Bairstow. I think Bairstow, first of all, I think it's fascinating that he's listed on the roster as a guard. I don't see if it was the NBA, I could see him as a guard. But with the Aggies, he's not a guard.
No. He's their 4 most times.
He's a 4. Yeah. He's a 3. Yeah. He's just kind of going back and forth. But Bairstow, another guy that's a good rebounder, deceivingly athletic. He's somebody who goes to the basket and he dunks on people in a way that I never, when he's 2 dribbles away from the hoop, I don't expect him to go up, finish, yeah. You know? But he's got an athleticism. He had a brother that played in the NBA. I really like Sean Bairstow. I think that losing him, he's a senior this year, losing him for next season is going to have a really, really big impact on this team, similar to like losing Justin Bean last year did. For Bairstow, I would give Bairstow a C plus, maybe a B minus, only because my only complaint about him is I feel like he tends to disappear at times. And you don't, you know, you'll be watching a Utah State game and I'm like, Bairstow played 33 minutes?
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
And like, that seems to be a bugaboo for a few Utah State players.
Right.
I mean, that's part of being an inconsistent young team trying to figure stuff out. We'll save Ashworth for last. I thought Taylor Funk kind of falls in the same category. Like, start of the year, hitting game winners, had a really good start to the year, but then right in the middle of the season, like when the Aggies were struggling, he was struggling. But then last night comes out against Boise, 9 of 12 from the field, 4 of 6 from 3-point land, 24 points, another big night for Funk. I mean, Ashworth seems like he might be the key to the Aggies, but maybe the Aggies go as far as Taylor Funk goes.
I'm going to give you the numbers for Taylor Funk over the last, let's say, 6 games.
Okay.
Just offensive. So against San Jose State, 4 points, 2 of 8 from the field.
Was that a loss?
Yes, that was a loss against San Jose State. Yeah. And then the next 5 games are this 5-game winning streak. So Air Force, he scored 5 points, was 2 of 7 from the field. Against Nevada, 11 points, 4 of 12 from the field. Not great, but yeah, 11 points.
11 points, yeah. I mean, double digits is pretty good.
Wyoming, 9 points, 3 of 6 from the field. Mm. Notice these shot totals, 8 shots, 7 shots, 6 shots. UNLV, 2 points, 1 of 3 from the field. Mm. Attempted 3 shots all night long. And then last night against Boise State, 24 points, 9 of 12 from the field. Great night, but I need from Taylor Funk and what Utah State needs from Taylor Funk in the postseason. I almost wrote this in the preview for last night's game, and I decided to go a different way. And after he exploded in the first half, I wish I had done this. Utah State, if you're looking at this roster, Taylor Funk is the bellwether. If Taylor Funk can score 15-plus points, the Aggies can beat anybody in the Mountain West and probably win an NCAA tournament game. If Taylor Funk is coming out and only attempting 6 shots and is just kind of a ghost offensively and not rebounding the basketball, the Aggies are going to have a hard time.
Yeah, I mean, because I remember the start of the year before conference play, Taylor Funk was doing really well. I mean, his last 6 games don't sound, besides Boise, right? Nothing spectacular. So can he find that consistency to be as good as he was at the beginning of the year? And I don't know. We'll see. That's going to be important. So, I mean, where do you kind of grade? I mean, this is his last year because he transferred.
Yep, this is his last season. Yeah. He will not be back in Logan last year. And okay, so I want to go back to the start of the year. He in the first three games of the season, Taylor Fung had two double-doubles, an 18-point, 14-rebound double-double against Utah Valley, and then had a 22-point, 12-rebound double-double against Santa Clara. So those are the first three games of the year. So he comes in. First few games right. in front of the Aggie crowd, and you're like, whoa, what kind of, who did we get? Who yes. is this? Did we just bring in an All-American? Inconsistency.
Right.
That's what it's come down. And sometimes I know after the UNLV game, Stephen Ashworth talked in the post game about how just some of the sets they were running offensively, they weren't involving Taylor very much. Well, if that's the case, I think you need to change the sets that you're running. Taylor has to be involved yes. offensively. He has to be, even if he's not scoring 15 points, Funk's got to be attempting 10 shots at least, because defenses have to account for him. You can't have him out on the floor taking three shots in a game. My overall grade for Taylor, because of the inconsistency, I'm going to give him a B-. He's a guy who can come out and fill it up. He scored 19 mm-hmm. points and a half earlier this season, 24 points last night against Boise State. But I need you to do it more consistently, right. and I need you to take good shots. Those are the things I need from Taylor Funk.
As Brian is basically saying, he needs the Aggies to get Taylor out of the funk.
Wow, that was, you've been waiting all season to use that one, haven't you?
I follow a lot of Aggie fans. It's not a Who Tryin' original, but
Funky Town.
so let's bring it to the steadying force then, because Stephen Ashworth, what more to say about this guy? He was the leading bench scorer for a long time. Has to come in and play for, we're talking about 40 minutes a game.
Yep.
Coming in and playing that role, facilitating, creating his own shot, getting his own. He's doing it all for the Aggies. And I just said, the Aggies go as far as Taylor Funk goes, but I think really it's as far as Ashworth goes.
Well, we know what we're going to get from Stephen Ashworth.
Right.
He does it every single night. There's not the inconsistency. And a part of that is the ball is in his hands.
Right.
If he's on the floor for 39 minutes, the ball's in his hands for 30 of those minutes, he's doing so much. For that reason and that reason alone, I've got to give Stephen Ashworth an A+ this season, because he started out the year as the backup point guard, as a guy who could come in and play alongside Ryland Jones or play without Ryland Jones, who can facilitate some offense, and you hope that he can be a very good shooter. What Stephen Ashworth has turned into is your primary point guard, is the single most important player on this team night in and night out,
yes.
and he's answered the bell every single night. That's the biggest thing. Like, I look at Ashworth's size, I don't know what he's listed at yes. on the roster, but if he's 6 feet and 190 pounds, I'd be really surprised. And for a person at that size to take on the workload and the playing time that he's done this year, simply incredible.
Yes. I mean, the Aggies have proven us wrong all year. Maybe not all year, but we just a few weeks ago, we're like, oh, boy, this team's
We could say all year. They were in the preseason poll. I think yeah. they were picked to finish eighth.
Yeah,
so let's say all year.
They've shown that they have some grit. Now they're on the bubble for the NCAA tournament. Some good players, and let's see what they can do if they can make some noise in the Mountain West tournament. Because if they get to the final, then I feel like that bubble's got to be locked up for them. Let's see if the Mountain West gets 3 to 4 teams in or not. So, go ahead.
On that note. Scotsman of the week.
Can we
give it to Steven?
I think so.
It's got to. I mean, listen to these numbers. 23 points, 7.5 assists, 3.5 steals, 3 rebounds per game, while shooting 53.3% yes. from the field, 50% from three, and making 6 of 7 free throws.
Like those games against San Diego State, like the games where he went cold, that's when San Diego State would make their run.
Yep.
So, he's really important, and it'll be nice to see. I really hope the Aggies, we'll see a quarterfinal, semifinal, final, wherever they can get to. That'd be great. If they win the tournament, it's easy. It's set. you know. So,
the Mountain West Conference Tournament starts Wednesday, March 8th. Colorado State's going to play Fresno State in the first game. There'll be three games that day. Utah State will play the winner of New Mexico versus Wyoming. That Aggie game will take place Thursday, March 9th. It's scheduled for an 8:30 tip, and if they win that, they're going to tip at 9 o'clock on Friday night. So, get your naps in, Aggie Nation. Yes. Get some rest. I know I'm going to.
Good old Vegas time. Vegas loves Aggies, apparently. So I'm.
Travel.
After that UNLV win, apparently, as the Aggies were walking through the casino, a lot of people were cheering because the people had bet Utah State to cover it, and like Utah State won them a lot of money. So
I've never gambled in my life.
There you go. Me. So, Brian, should we pay the bills?
Do you know where they can find all this stuff?
Wherever you podcasting listening, but also on the new and improved KSL Sports app. Too bad this is not a visual medium because we have this brand new graphic that has a QR code.
It's a pretty graphic.
Yeah, you scan it and you download the new app. So we got the brand new KSL Sports app. So I'm gonna make sure to get that. Follow me on the Twitterverse. I'm gonna have a couple Red Rock Gymnastics videos out soon. I'm at Who Trans Superman. That's HUUTRAN Superman. Who do you think you are? I am.
And you could follow me on Twitter at BPriest24. That's at BPREECE24. And follow all of KSL Sports on the KSL Sports app, of course. And then you can find us on social media at KSL Sports.
There you go. And real easy, real easy. I mean, it could be easier, but that's how easy you made it. So.
All right, Who, last thing.
Yep.
Are the Aggies going to advance to the Mountain West Championship on Saturday?
Oh, the way they're playing right now, I feel it. I feel it. Go. I mean, hey, if you don't have spring break plans yet, you have them now. Go to Vegas. You know, get out of the snow in Logan. Go to Vegas. Go to those tournaments. And they're really fun. They're really fun. Last year there wasn't that many fans there. I can see why. I hope this year they travel because this team is a lot more fun than it was last year.
Show me the Scotsman traveling south on I-15 to Las Vegas.
Two years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.